new game, same results for the Blue Jays. They fall 5-1 in game two of the doubleheader. The Yankees sweep the doubleheader, win the series at Yankee Stadium, and all of a sudden, it really is time to get the hell out of the Bronx, Mr. Blake Murphy.
Yeah, get out of the Bronx, get off the road, get back to Toronto, use yet another off day more productively, hopefully. 1-7 in their last eight, 1-5 on that road trip. Almost 2 weeks since they last scored four runs in a game. Things are looking pretty bleak, considering like a week and a half ago, we were hearing Bowden Francis and company after that Friday win against the Mariners talk about how everything felt different. Everything felt pretty good. No longer grooving.
That's Blake Murphy. I'm Julia Kreitz. You are listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. The Yankees beating the Blue Jays 5-1. Three hits on the day for the Blue Jays, or on the game, rather, for the Blue Jays, Blake. And, you know, again, just more of the same issues. The only extra base hit that they got was Anthony Santander's home run. We will talk about that as well during this program. But it's starting to get a little repetitive here, Blake. You know, you have Chris Bassitt on the mound. He was pitching pretty well. And I understand that, you know, things got a little out of hand in the sixth inning. But you look at Clark Schmidt, the starter for the Yankees, coming in with all sorts of trouble in his first couple of starts of the season. He issues four walks, including two in the first inning, to Bo Bichette, or rather to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and to Santander. The Blue Jays come up empty. And listen, we spoke a little bit about the fact that the Blue Jays were facing a lot of elite pitchers early on, and that may have obviously contributed to the slow start to the offense. There was a little bit of weather involved. There was a lot of talk about process and about just finding your swing, making good swing decisions. When you're in a game like this, Blake, when you kind of have the starter in the ropes early on in the first inning and you're trying to mount something, you're trying to get out of there with a win and with a series win, for the Blue Jays to come up empty again in those spots, it really begs the question of where does this team actually go from here, and how much more is there really to this lineup? Because if this isn't the team's identity, we're still, you know, waiting for them to figure that out. And now what we're seeing is not even the singles are coming by. Not even those hard-fought at-bats are necessarily coming by. You look at what Santander did today, very encouraging in that second game, but still, it's not at all where we expected this team to be at this point in the season.
And with Santander, it's one hit, right? I know he had a walk as well, and it's a beautiful-looking lefty swing when he does get into one for a home run. But it kind of, as Ben Schulman announces that home run, it kind of puts everything into perspective where, hey, he's now tied for the team lead with three home runs. It's April 27th. They're in second to last in home runs. They are now in the bottom five in the league in runs per game, overall slugging percentage. So if you care about stacking singles and doubles and things like that, there's not a thing that they're doing particularly well offensively anymore. And I will push back on one thing that you said it's repetitive. We got today two games, and we got one of each variety of Blue Jay games so far this year. We got the there are 11 hits and they can't string anything together, and they go, what was it, 1-for-13 or something like that with runners in scoring position, 2-for-13, sorry, with runners in scoring position. And then they have the game where they can't get any hits. So there's no problem with runners in scoring position because you're not putting anyone in scoring position. I think your point about getting to the starter is a good one. And we talked about it a little bit between the games because Max Fried did not look like Max Fried in the first two innings of that game, and they weren't able to do anything with it. He gave them a free run in the first. They loaded the bases. They weren't able to take advantage. Second inning, he's a little labored after, I think, a 27-pitch first inning. He doesn't look like Max Fried, not able to cobble anything together. And then he settles in and looks like himself. Ronel Blanco the other day, same thing we talked about. This one, Clark Schmidt, a scenario very similar to Ronel Blanco. Come in with rough numbers on the season so far. And yeah, Schmidt's just coming back from the IL and things like that. There is context to his poor start, but that's a guy you probably want to jump on pretty early. I'm sure the confidence is not 1,000% when you have two rough starts like that. And you are able to get some traffic early on. He doesn't have great command. And after he put Vlad and Santander on in the first inning, George Springer, who has been the Blue Jays' best hitter throughout the season, had a really rough plate appearance, chased two really bad pitches in the same plate appearance, and not, you know, not with his back against the wall, pretty sweepers that didn't start on the plate, let alone finish on the plate. And then Andrés Giménez had a pretty bad one too, where he got something in a good part of the plate and just couldn't do anything with it. So to follow Schmidt being pretty mistake heavy in the first inning with, hey, I just watched two walks and now we're chasing outside of the zone on breaking balls, and then a tough one for Giménez, it kind of set the tone. And I don't know if you felt this way, but after that first inning, it did have an element of here we go again. And I don't know how you keep that out of the dugout right now when it's been 2 weeks of here we go again.
Yeah, that's pretty much the sentiment on the text line right now. Remember, you can text us at 590-590. Leave your name and location so that we can give you a proper shout out here. Brent from Halifax saying, it's infuriating to be back in a spot where it feels like every time the other team scores more than one run, the game is over. How are we here again? I would much rather watch a team that scores a ton but can't pitch than watch this, which is, you know, obviously offensive baseball is more fun, no matter how you slice it. But, you know, you can't take away from what the Blue Jays pitching has been doing. It's just they need some justice to be served here. They need to see a little bit of a pick me up from the offense as well, because it has been pretty remarkable that the Blue Jays have been able to stay in games as long as they have with the pitching doing what they've been doing.
Yeah, not the best of days for Kevin Gausman, certainly. Chris Bassett probably would have liked the one inning back, but he's been so solid on the season. For Chris Bassett to be six starts in with a 2.62 ERA, and I know we don't care a lot about pitcher wins anymore, but to be stuck on two wins after you pitch that well has got to be a little frustrating. And, you know, we just went a whole turn through the rotation and twice for Gausman and Bassett, where one bad inning is not even a tear it down, chase you from the game inning. So put Gausman's today aside, but last Bowden Francis start, last Kevin Gausman start before this one, the Barrios, of course, got the win on Friday, but his start before that one, Bassett's last two starts, you got to pitch pretty perfect baseball to feel like you're giving this team a chance to win right now. And there is, in addition to them running a four-man rotation right now, there has to be a cumulative pressure that creates where, look, I'm sure Chris Bassett would tell you, no, I want to go out and pitch my best every single time. I'm not saying it fundamentally changes how he pitches, but that's got to be something the pitching staff is very aware of, that if you give up a four spot, if you give up a three spot, you're putting this team in a situation, fairly or not to the pitchers, that they haven't really shown they're equipped to come back from.
And so it's only natural that, you know, most of the texts that we're getting are along those lines. We will go to the phone as well. We have Ryan in Innisfil who wants to talk about exactly that, the hitting issues. Ryan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Hey, Ryan, are you there?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear us?
It's Russ.
Oh, hi, Russ. How's it going? Sorry about that.
Good. I'm sorry. I didn't know you. But, you know, I think you said it well. It was a difference of two games where, you know, the score's 11-2 at the end of the first game, but you had a chance there in the first inning. Freed's a great pitcher, and you had him, you know, he was wild. He wasn't throwing strikes. And you never know how a game plays out if you get that big hit early. Okay? The second game, the same thing. You get first and second. And I'm not going to get on Springer because, like you said, Springer's been the best hitter. He's been a patient hitter at the plate. He's got the count, you know, he's got the count in his favor a lot of times. You know, he fouls off a lot of pitches. So he's been pretty good. But I look at the bottom of the lineup, and of course, Guerrero's not, you know, two home runs, and Santander's been terrible. But even if those guys come around, I look at the bottom of the lineup like, what do I have here? You know, what do I have? How am I going to score runs? And it must be very, very frustrating to pitch for this team because, like you guys said, if you go out there and you give up a three spot, you think you'll lose the game. So it's just right now it's very, very hard to watch. And, you know, you hope things can change around. It's only, you know, what is it, 28 games into the season. But it's you know, I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I really, really don't. I just don't see it. I don't, you know, see the bottom of the lineup You know, I don't see Alejandro Kirk or guys like that in the lineup that are going to get it together, you know, to make this a good offensive team. And, you know, thank God nobody's run away with it in the American League East so far. No one's playing tremendous. But this team better get their offense in order quickly or the season's going to come to an end in July like last year. So that's my comment for today.
Hey, Russ, thank you so much for your call and for your takes. Yeah, 0-for-4 with runners in scoring position today in the second game. 5 runners left on base. And again, it's, you know, we have a text here from Mike in Victoria saying we had an offensive problem last year. Shapira and Atkins augmented it with bringing in Santander and AAA players. 4 guys in this game under the Mendoza line. Not what you would expect here. Not a great look for a team that is trying to not only make the playoffs, but it seemed for a moment there that they actually had a chance to go and make a play for this division, which is just becoming farther and farther away. You and I joke that we wanted so badly to have a Jays Talk Plus game or a Jays Talk Plus show, a first place show, and that's just farther and farther away now.
Yeah, for context, for anyone who didn't hear on our first episode of Jays Talk Plus, the Jays were in first the day before we started the show, and some friends were teasing me that, like, coming off of last year's Jays season and this year's Raptors season, that the Jays were going to tank as soon as Jays Talk Plus started up. They fell into second immediately once Jays Talk Plus started back up, and now they are in fourth place, and they're 4 games back of the Yankees. Too early for me for the doomsaying and things like that, but I think the important part of those texts, of Russ's comments, of the way you set that up, is that this was not to this extreme. You didn't think they'd be, you know, fifth to last in offense at this point, but the offensive limitations were a known issue. So when we talk about it's early, but a lot of these same issues were present last year. And if you asked the fan base or the media that covers the team and things like that, where were the potential weaknesses heading into this year, you would have identified some of these problems. The length of the lineup. Sure, they'll get Dalton Varsho back this week, which should add a little bit of pop. Anthony Santander is not going to OPS sub 600 for the season, but there were a lot of question marks about their ability in the back half of the lineup to lengthen that lineup and, you know, whether platooning some AAA guys that maybe need a little bit more finishing time, whether that would be enough. And so far, you've gotten big contributions from Miles Straw and Tyler Heineman, but everyone else in those kind of bench roles or part-time roles has struggled.
Even a guy like Alan Roden, who was, you know, he had a great camp. He made the team. No one really expected him to make the team. And he's struggled for a while now, so much so that, you know, some of the texts on the text line right now are clamoring for him to go back down to AAA and figure out what is going on. I'm a little reticent about that. I still think it's early. I still think that he's a guy who will figure it out if you give him enough time. But hard to argue with the facts that this lineup does look pretty thin. And it's, you know, Dalton Varsho will add something to that, but it is not looking great at the bottom right now, Blake.
No, and that one of the nice things about having a handful of guys like this is that it can become a meritocracy where we saw David Schneider go down and Addison Barger stick around. 2 of these guys are going down by Tuesday. One has to come off the roster today. Jonathan Clase was up as the 27th man. Maybe it's him. He's still only 22. You want him playing every day. But if you wanted a different element in the lineup, someone who is a switch hitter, so you're not as lefty heavy, someone who adds an element of speed, maybe there's a case to be made that one of the lefties, Alan Roden, Will Wagner, Nathan Lucas, Addison Barger, one of those guys goes down either for Class A or for Varsho or for both.
That's Blake Murphy. I'm Julia Kreitz, and you're listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. The Yankees beating the Blue Jays 5-1 to sweep the doubleheader. Take the series at Yankee Stadium. Let's go back to the phones, Blake, and let's try to talk to Ryan again, who wants to talk about exactly those hitting issues. Ryan, what's on your mind?
One second. Hey, guys, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks. Just I'll be quick because I'm working, but like smart man once said, the definition of insanity is to do the same thing over and over and over again and expect change. I don't like that we're not already hitting the panic button. We totally should be. All of the same issues that we had last year are again issues this year. It's not looking like it's going to get better. It's time to make a change. It's time to make a tough decision with the lineup. It's time to make a move. It's been that time for 13 months or so now, and I don't know what the delay in that is. I don't understand how Ross still has his job. Like, I have staff. If my staff wasn't doing their job correctly, I would fire them. Like, I'm confused is all how they are accepting mediocrity. It's unacceptable, especially with where the payroll's at. Something's got to change because if it continues the way it does, like, I don't ever miss a game. I watched every game last year, but I can't do it anymore. It's destroying me. So, like, I'm wondering if you're in the same boat or if you're actually for real not hitting the panic button yet, because it's definitely panic time.
Thanks for your call, Ryan. I don't know where I stand, actually, with whether it's time to hit the panic button or not. Where do you stand, Blake?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a panicker in general. And when I said earlier I'm not at a point of doomsaying, I mean in terms of the division. Like, they're only four games back with, like, over 100 games to go. There are ways to win baseball games. In terms of the offense, though, like I kind of said a few minutes ago, like, these were known issues. So even if you are optimistic about a few of the players hitting a little better, you know, hey, maybe some power will come. Maybe they'll do a little bit better with runners in scoring position, which they did well. Even with all those things, this projects as, what, an average offense if all those things start going right. So we entered this season knowing that I could have told you opening day of the season, opening day of spring training, come trade deadline shows, we're going to be talking about adding another bat, likely a righty bat, third base or left field or DH or something like that. So these are known issues. To Ryan's question about why not now, the best answer that I have is that baseball just, like, no front offices work that way. The Colorado Rockies right now know they're sellers, but that's it. Everyone else will stick it out a little bit. You rarely see anything other than maybe the odd reliever get traded until we get into, like, mid-late June. I would have the urgency of, I came into this season knowing I was going to have this hole looks even worse than I expected. Let's try to address it. But it takes other teams to play ball on that. And I don't know if it's an Atkins and Shapiro thing or it's just an MLB league-wide thing. But short of a reliever move, you just don't see teams make a trade this early. And, you know, that's not a good justification for it, but it's the best explanation I can come up with as to why we don't see a team address an obvious hole this early.
Yeah, it's, you know, I tended to think, Blake, that if the right deal comes along, teams will listen, but it's also the fact that the Blue Jays don't necessarily have the prospect capital to come in guns a-blazing, let's put it like that, this early on.
You saying other teams don't want players off, like, the last place AAA team and the last place AA team?
Well, there you go, right? It's just, it's thin right now everywhere you look. And so you're probably going to have to be a little bit patient and hope that the division stays and the league as a whole stays within reach so that you can maneuver some of those holes and find a way to address them at the trade deadline. That's Blake Murphy. I'm Julia Kreitz. We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll go back to the text lines, we'll go back to the phone line, and we'll talk a little bit more about Chris Bassitt and his start today. We'll be back in a flash. This is Blue Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, pardon my French, I don't give a shit about the offense when it comes to how I'm pitching. I feel like I completely gave the game away in the sixth. I feel like I deserved the loss. I thought I pitched a really, really bad game in the sixth. Got beat by the worst possible pitch that I could throw. Just breaking down the sixth is not going to be fun. Yeah.
That was Blue Jays starter Chris Bassitt breaking out the French after taking the loss there in game two of this doubleheader. The Yankees beating the Blue Jays 5-1. Welcome back to Jays Talk. I'm Julia Kreutz, alongside Blake Murphy for 10 more minutes or so. Blake, before we talk about Chris Bassitt's start, and I have some disagreements with him there. I think he was a little bit too hard on himself, but we'll get back to that. It's time for the Bet365 standings update. Download the Bet365 app for today's baseball odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365, 19 plus, play responsibly, Ontario only. With that second win of the day, the Yankees are now 17-11, and they lead the American League East. The Boston Red Sox are 16-14. They're two games back of the lead. The Rays, who have won five games in a row, are 14-14 at three games back for the division. The Blue Jays then falling behind the Rays for fourth place in the AL East with the two losses today. They are 13-15 And the Orioles, who got blanked today, are at 10-17 for fifth place in this division. Blake, we heard Chris Bassitt talk about his start. I would argue that it was not as bad as he made it out to be. He seemed to be commanding at least the sinker pretty well. A lot of movement on the pitch. We saw a bunch of his strikeouts come on that pitch. The changeup and the splitter didn't seem to be there for him all that much. And then the couple of home runs that he allowed were just cutters that were mistake pitches. But arguably, you know, those are mistake pitches that you live with if you have something going on the other end for a couple of solo home runs. How did you feel about Chris Bassitt's start? Obviously not as dominant as we have seen him this season, but not that bad either.
Thought he was great through five. I would, you know, come somewhere between your assessment and his when it comes to his sixth inning. The pitch to Aaron Judge is, you know, look, I've never been on a Major League Baseball mound. I would bet Chris Bassitt would say you can't leave an 88-mile-an-hour cutter with that much plate to Aaron Judge. You can't do it, even if it's third time through the order, even if your pitch count's getting up there. That was leadoff an inning, too, so he should have been ostensibly a little fresher. The rest of it, he got, you know, bled a little bit on stuff the rest of that inning. It wasn't, you know, the Jason Dominguez double was pretty hard hit, but the Jazz Chisholm single, okay, it gets through the infield. There were just a lot of smaller things outside of that. The Judge one's a pretty bad mistake. Yeah. I would guess he wanted the Dominguez one back. Also, we kind of thought he was coming out before the Dominguez one. Maybe they wanted to let Bassitt try to get out of it, or they didn't want to turn Dominguez around to the right side and have Brandon Little come in a batter early. I'm not sure exactly there. And Bassett's pitch count wasn't crazy high. But really, I would say, you know, the Judge mistake is one you can't make. It also is 2-1 at that point. You should feel okay about that. So I'm sure my guess would be it's the Dominguez one that he's really kicking himself about and would say that it's going to be a tough watch back. I would say my biggest thing with Bassitt's comments is I really appreciate that level of accountability and like perfectionism in his craft, where you give up 4 runs over 5 2/3 innings to the best offensive baseball and Aaron Judge gets you for one, and to not be complacent with that. I appreciate the tone that sets and the leadership of trying to, whether he was intentionally doing it or not, take a little heat off the hitters by putting it on himself. The reality is they only scored 1 run. So
yeah, I agree with you. That is leadership. And we have seen Chris Bassitt do that before, and not just when he is losing and the offense is not coming up with the hits, but also, you know, when he falters. And, you know, last year there was one point in which he didn't pitch very well. The offense did pick him up. And the way that he phrased that was, I'm just happy for those guys, right? And so you see that that level of really, you know, understanding of where the team is and what you can provide. Maybe it doesn't matter all that much, Blake, but at least in that clubhouse, I'm sure that Chris Bassitt's comments do resonate and are appreciated. He went 5 2/3 in this one, 6 hits allowed, 4 earned runs, 1 walk on 5 strikeouts and 2 home runs, a pair of solo shots, 1 to Trent Grisham, who led off the game with a homer, and then the mistake to Aaron Judge in the sixth that gave the Yankees the lead. The Yankees never really looking back. We are going back to the phone lines here. We have Mark in Tampa. Who wants to talk about the lineup?
I was in Toronto for last week, and I came back to Florida to pack up. But, no, they got to mix the lineup up. You know, let's put Springer back in the leadoff. Let's shake it up. You know, I hope Scherzer gets back fast. And the one other comment is, and leave the phone on for me because I only got the phone to listen to your comments afterwards. But I think, you know, Vladdy and Bolinat, they're pitching these sweeping pitches. They're pitching these cutters on the outside corners. And these guys are looking terrible swinging at him, getting strikes. You know, maybe you just sit there, wait for the pitch that you need. And if he throws a good pitch and you got your bat on your shoulder, fine. But I don't know what's better, having your bat on your shoulder or reaching way outside to try to hit something out there. And if you could leave me on so I can hear your response, I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. It's that's it. We've talked quite a bit, Blake, about, you know, shuffling the lineup, trying new things. At the end of the day, I am all for it because clearly what is going on right now is not working. And I wouldn't mind seeing George Springer back in the leadoff spot with the way that he is swinging the bat. But at the end of the day, it really shouldn't matter. These guys are major league hitters. And so I don't know. Where do you stand with the whole lineup shuffle situation?
It's tough because moving Springer to the leadoff spot could alleviate the issues at the top of the order. There's also like a small risk of you're toying with the only thing that's working. George Springer has looked way better further down in the order. Honestly, I'm not a huge lineup construct. Like I don't think it matters that much. I think it matters way more that none of these guys are hitting particularly well. Sure, it'd be great to get George Springer an extra at bat here and there, maybe get some traffic on the bases early, although in neither of these games did early traffic in the first and second inning pay off for them. So I like on merit, Springer should be, you could justify him hitting a little higher in the order. You are just moving the question around though, where then it's okay, you've got Springer and Guerrero at the top, then your 3-4 is not hitting particularly well. And Bo hasn't hit for, you know, any power yet so far this year. So then you kind of just move the problem around. I'm all for it though. We're going on Tuesday will be 2 weeks since they scored 4 runs in a game. You could tell me, you know, you could go slow pitch style and just, we're going to pull the order out of a hat just to shake things up. Look, at this point you can try something new, even if it's not, you know, the perfect analytical solution or perfect lineup construction solution. It's at a point where I'm okay mixing things up.
Here's something that popped up a little bit on the text line after game 2. We have about 5 minutes left on the show here, but a couple of texts, one from Max from East York and Lee in Guelph. Please enlighten me. Barger is hitting well the past few games. Why is he not in the lineup? Third base platoons with Lucas, Roden, Clement, and Wagner not being productive. No power, no established playing time for Barger. Penciling him in every game. What is going on? And Lee saying, why was Barger not in the game 2 starting lineup? John Schneider needs to start managing to win series. He's not managing too far out, or he is managing too far out. And if managing to win a series puts them in a tough position for the first game of the next one, then so be it. Deal with it at that time. The Barger thing is very interesting to me because he comes off the bench in game 1. He gets a couple of hits, including an RBI double, and then he sits game 2. If this is a guy who is heating up and you're here and you want to give him some momentum and you want to see what he can do, yeah, why not have him in the lineup for that second game?
I was pretty surprised. I had to double check the lineup to make sure I didn't have something wrong in that one because, like you said, he came off the bench, gave a little spark in the first one. He's also, you know, when you look at the way the bottom of the order is constructed, there are some guys who have good approach, some guys you might project to be like really solid bottom of the order bats eventually. None of those guys have the upside that Barger has if he swings and gets into one, if he finds a little bit of a hot streak. I think it's worth investing in giving him opportunity to see if he can find it because, again, there's a lot of swing and miss in him. There's a chance he doesn't end up, you know, making enough contact, but there's also a chance that he ends up being a pretty impactful hitter with how hard he hits the ball. And you don't have that skill set. You don't have that potential with any of the other bottom of the order guys. The only thing I could really think of for why he might not have been in there, and again, he's the only player of the 14 that they had who didn't start at least one of the games. Maybe given his issues with breaking balls, they just expected Clark Schmidt to just spin too much at him, and maybe it wasn't a great matchup. I know they tend to look at, you know, pitch type and swing path and things like that, not just handedness. But when you've got, what did they go, 5 lefties or switch hitters at the bottom of the order, you're clearly leaning into the handedness platoon against Schmidt, and to have your kind of most powerful lefty bat right now, or your highest potential lefty bat on the bench, I was a little confused by it.
That's Blake Murphy. I'm Julia Kreutz. We are doing Jays Talk, another losing edition of Jays Talk. Unfortunately, 5-1 at the hands of the Yankees. Blake, I will read one more text before we go, and this is only partially to toot my own horn. I also think that Terry in St. Catharines has a good point. This is the text. Hey, Julia, love your work. Great perspective and better style. I agree. Thank you, Terry. And his their second point, which is the real point here, is do you know what is more frustrating than watching a stagnant offense? Watching a so-called defense and pitching first roster give up unforced runs and make fielding errors, putting pressure on the stagnant offense. Insert frustrated scream here. Doesn't that resonate? And yeah, Blake, I think you know, when that starts to go, when you see, you know, the defense falter and the singles not come and the havoc on the bases they were creating, that all disappears. Then you start to really get concerned about this team.
You do. I will say in this instance, neither of the errors led to anything.
Yeah. That's
so
fair.
You at least got away from it. It is frustrating to see, certainly, and particularly if you're Bo Bichette and you are looking down the first home runless month of your career, and you know are struggling other than to slap the odd single here and there, to also add defensive errors when you have been pretty solid defensively to start the year. It's got to be a sign of frustration, and more so frustration than carelessness to me.
That's Blake Murphy. I'm Julia Kreutz. This has been Jays Talk. Thank you for listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Belleville and Trenton. Crown is proud to be Canadian-owned and operated since 1986, so protect your vehicle from rust today at your local Crown Rust Control Center or visit crown.com. Crown, Canada's number one rust protection. For Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Chris LaRue, Ben Schulman, Blake Murphy, I'm Julia Kreutz. Thank you for listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We'll talk to you later.